My name is William Del Pilar, and you are watching Points on the Board with my good friend,
Big John.
And guys, I am loving our shows. Each week, John, we improve. We're doing so many things, but yet we're still doing our best to stick to our schedule and do these podcasts. Because I got to be honest, I do think our podcasts, they're not over the top, but me being Latino, you know me, I'm going to state how I feel about certain issues that other podcasts won't. I don't know if you cringe, smile, or what. What's your reaction, John?
Oh, my reaction is I think I've been awesome from the get-go.
There you go, people. And it's going to be another awesome show tonight. We're going to talk about the latest breaking news in Deshaun Watson. We're going to talk about Herschel Walker, and it may make you cringe, fellow conservatives, but we must speak truths when they are out there to be talked about. And finally, we're going to close it out with Gronk. Rob Gronkowski and his retirement. You know, John, you posed a great question off camera we're going to talk about, but I've got to be honest. Whenever I think of Gronk, I don't think of greatness. I think of an injury-prone tight end, you know. And that's not to say he wasn't great. It's just that guy had some brutal injuries,
he did.
You know, in his career. So when I see him, I think that. And then I think of the Aaron Hernandez pairing, the great 1-2 punch. I'm sure they look back at those shower scenes differently.
Yeah, in more ways than one. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's get going. Let's start out with Deshaun Watson. There was breaking news, and Big John – hold on. I think we got some breaking news here, John.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, we do. Hold on. Let me pop it up. Thank you all for attending. I'm going to keep this short and sweet because I have to get back to counting all the money that I suckered the Cleveland Browns into giving me. But before I go, as to the question of the allegations made by some women against my Johnson, I have never, ever disrespected any woman. I love women. As a matter of fact, my mother's a woman. But like the great Jay-Z said, I've got 99 problems, and 66 of them are bitch-related. That's all for now. Thank you for your time. All glory to Jesus. Peace, y'all.
And we are back. Big John. Thank goodness we have a great news-breaking team. I haven't seen that since we had 32 beat reporters at KFFL. Some good stuff.
I know, and thank God we have your experience as someone who knows how to build a news staff, because I think with these guys on the case going forward, we'll be much more value to our viewers. So I'm glad we have those guys on board.
But let's talk about Deshaun Watson. It came out today, 20 of the women have settled out of court, and possibly the other four looking to settle. What does this mean? We're not sure yet because the NFL still has to come down with their suspension. And if you look back at their history, most of the people they've suspended have not been convicted of anything. Right. And at the end of the day, I still think it's very devastating that he had happy ending relations with at least 66 women, 24 who are taking him to civil court. And it did come out last week, and this is, again, not to get too political, but this is why I call it fake news media. I only saw that story in one spot. A police officer who was investigating it said she believes that Deshaun Watson is guilty of some criminality, which goes to my belief and to pretty much, what's that saying? A district attorney can indict a ham sandwich if he wants to. Belief. And OutKick came out maybe a week or two ago, and it's the only place I've seen that there should be an investigation into the relations between Watson's attorney and the district attorney, which, going into the conspiracy side, which is fun to say, but it's not because the money's documented, the Houston district attorney is a Soros elected attorney, meaning she was funded by Soros, the bulk of the money. And Soros, for people who don't know, sets up these PACs or these nonprofit organizations, and that's how he did it. So, for example, Acorn, remember Acorn from around 2012? That was a George Soros funded. It was one of his nonprofits who he was putting money into that was funneling that money into Acorn. So it's kind of like a soap opera, and I've thrown a lot at you, John, but real quick, what's your thought process on the fact that 20 of the 24 women have settled their contracts? We don't know for how much. So one, how much do you think on average each woman got? And then what are your thoughts?
Oh, I have no idea what they got, but it's got to be substantial, obviously, if the attorney signed off on it, because he gets a third of it. So, you know, I'm sure he made his coins. He wanted to make that as valuable as possible. Listen, Deshaun Watson, we've said it all along, he needs to make these go away. Now, by hook or by crook, he's got to make it go away. He's got guaranteed money in Cleveland, which we all thought was a mistake on the part of the Browns. Certainly the other 31 owners in the NFL think that was a mistake, because now you hear Lamar Jackson wants the same guaranteed money. You know, so financially, it was one of the worst, for a lot of different reasons, the Browns effed up that one big time. For Deshaun Watson as a player, he needs to get this out of the way. Because like you said, whether he's convicted of a crime or not, the NFL's going to suspend him. Like you said, the precedent is there. They don't need a legal conviction. All they need is to invoke the best interests of the game clause that's standard in every player's contract. So people could say, well, look, no women want to watch any NFL until you get some sort of punishment, Deshaun, just like with Michael Vick. You know, like, do how many people actually cared about him killing dogs? You know,
I was going to say,
I'm sure some people did, but I'm sure it wasn't enough where nobody would watch NFL games anymore.
I still watched it.
Right. So we already know what the NFL does, and we also know how they protect certain players. We get it. It's very much not dependent on the actual criminality involved, right? The convictions that may or may not exist. So
the image the NFL wants.
They want to portray a certain image. So my guess is that as soon as possible, he wants to get rid of every possible case that he can, which this is a good start for him. And then the sooner the better, because then the sooner he could start his suspension, whether it'll be a half year or full year, you know, I don't know, 10 games, I don't know, whatever it ends up being, because I'm sure his argument will be like, hey, I didn't get convicted of a crime.
That's a baseless argument based off precedent. But if I was him, the argument I would use is, take a guess.
I don't know.
Well, Robert Kraft got his little happy ending. You didn't do anything to him. He got a minor slap on the wrist.
Right.
Now, there's two thought processes. They're the owners. Suck it up. It doesn't matter. Nothing's going to happen. And he's actually a popular owner, and he's popular around the country. There's been no conspiracy, no bad news outside of that. But that said, if I'm the Watson camp, I am screaming the blue heaven, but it could backfire because at the end of the day, you're talking 66 happy endings. And my take on this is it was a nightmare waiting to happen. What is it? What's the term when you get comfortable? You don't think anything's going to happen? Complacent. He got complacent because he was a protected man. When his stuff happened, it happened during the BLM riots, the George Floyd. Touching anything black at that time in that way, white owners, white NFL, it was a no-go. So they kind of hit him away for a year. And people, if you don't like me saying that, suck it up. It's the truth. You know, it's a simple truth. And I say that as a Latino who watched this, you know, looking at it from that perspective. But that said, and I'm saying this kind of, this is my opinion, not Big John's, you know. But that said, by hiding him away for a year, by paying him not to play, he got complacent. You know, people say, he says, I'm innocent. I'm not going to sit there and settle this. And then they throw back in his face, well, you tried to settle it for $100,000. You know, I believe him in the sense where I'm not going to settle it because I'm innocent. But when you're looking at such a cheap number at $100,000 based on what you make, and this is
yeah,
one
you should, contract. You should, yeah, just do it. I agree with you. Just do it. And, especially since it cost him what he wanted, which was a trade to the Dolphins. Like everyone seems to agree.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and like Stephen Ross, Miami owner, basically said, I'm not taking on that risk. Sorry, I love Deshaun Watson as a player, but I'm not taking on that kind of risk. So
good for him. But hold on. he was supposedly willing to pay Brian Flores $100,000 a game to lose. Something doesn't add up there in the philosophical belief, you know?
No, because paying Flores to lose, if he did that, paying Flores to lose isn't a criminal offense, and it's not something that'll keep people away from the stadium, right? Because, you know, you got the first round pick, you got the number one pick overall, at least that's what you were trying to do. And tanking, although it's technically against the rules.
Well, hold on, John. So fixing the game is illegal, right?
Yeah.
So technically, that's if he's telling his coach to lose, he's saying fix the game so we don't win.
I hear that argument, and that's why no one ever admits to it, because there's all these bettors, right? But my contention,
oh, yeah, the lawsuits.
Yeah, my contention is that every bettor knows when a team is tanking and they take advantage of it. That's why the lines move crazy with Vegas when a team's 0-14, right? Because, you know, the part of the expectation in any sport is that a bad team's going to tank for a better draft pick. So, especially in the NFL, where the difference between 1 and 2 can be so great at times in certain
Peyton
years,
Manning,
right?
Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf.
Yeah, look at that. Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf, you know, when you had Reggie Bush and Clowney and all those guys, right? So, I mean, the truth of the matter is that it's against the rules, but every single fan, every single gambler, every single Vegas bookmaker understands tanking happens. So I think it's a little bit different like that. With
John, those are insiders. I mean, because I'm not a gambler. That's just why I have an addictive personality. But I know somebody who worked for Billy Walters. And if you don't know who Billy Walters is, he's one of the greatest gamblers in the history of the game. And he would – when I would read articles, it's like what was so impressive is he could move the – gamblers like him that bet in the 10, 20, but they can move lines. And I remember reading an article that moving a line is actually very difficult. It can happen, but it takes, like you said, something big coming out and all the fans shift their bets and that moves the line. So tanking games, that's not really one of those move the lines. It's what the insiders may know, but I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. I'm saying that, what about that perspective from that? Cause that's what I've kind of read.
No, I don't think so. Because what I'm saying is the tanking is probably baked into the spread. So,
okay, gotcha.
Right? So, like, for example, if let's say you're the 0-11 Texans and you're playing the Packers,
okay,
right?
The Detroit Lions, the 0-16 Detroit Lions.
Okay, even better.
The 0-15,
right. So if you're the Lions towards the end of the year and you're fighting to get the number one overall pick potentially, right, or the Jaguars, right, the line, the odds makers have already baked the fact that they're tanking and that they have losing momentum into the spread.
Gotcha.
So there's probably a 3-4 point on the plus side for them coverage, right? So that's how fans are aware of it, and that's how Vegas compensates. Okay, we kind of know they're going to throw the game, so that's why we're giving them even more points. They have to make it hard not to cover, right? Almost to the point where it would be so obvious that they're tanking because it, like they're getting plus 17 or plus 15, right? That's what I meant, that it's already baked in, but nobody really cares. Now, on the other hand, the public perception of your fan base saying, hey, we've got a sexual predator that we traded 4, 5, 6 picks for.
Is that happening, John? I mean, when I look at fan bases, they seem to excuse everything.
Like, I've seen some of the reactions online of some of the Cleveland fan base, and it's been pretty severe. Like our friend Gary Davenport, who's a writer for multiple sites. I think he's at Deadspin. Not Deadspin. He's at Bleacher Report. He's at Fantasy Sharks.
Gary,
he's a great NFL writer and fantasy writer, colleague in the FSWA, lifelong Cleveland Browns fan, lifelong, swore them off. The second they signed, they traded for Deshaun Watson, swore them off. He announced he's becoming a Bengals fan, staying in Ohio, but switching to the Bengals.
Hey, which
I guess in that Bengals-Browns rivalry is sort of like going from Auburn to Alabama or vice versa, you know.
I mean, those are serious rivalries. Somebody who does that isn't seen as a true fan. It's like in Alabama, you're either part of the Tide or you're a Tiger. And if you're in the top part of the Tide, obviously you've been happy the last 20 years.
Right.
Tigers. But Tar Heels in North Carolina State. UNC
University. You're right. And so – or Duke, right? So I mean, the point is, there have been a lot of Cleveland fans that have said, we're not happy with the fact that you brought a perceived sexual predator onto your team. We don't want to win at that cost. So they've had some, and especially with what they paid him, the $232 million guaranteed money. So there has been feedback. That's a different type of feedback. But like you said, the point is, Deshaun Watson, did he do the right thing? Yeah, settle, man. You should have done it a while ago. You know, if the ones that didn't want to settle, then you go to court. But, like, settle, get it out, have them sign NDAs. They can never talk about it, or else they owe you money plus interest. Just do the Trump thing. Give them an NDA, and then if you talk, you owe me money plus, you know, you get to pay me then. So I think that's the way to approach it, quite honestly.
You know, I got to be honest. I think said that settlement of those 20 women may have been 10 to 15 million, maybe up to 20 million. This was becoming a nightmare for him, like you said, some of the fans. Right. But for the first time, I did see a tie to Kraft, which is a positive for Watson. But outside of that, I think this tie began to turn when it went from what was 22 to 24 women. And that kind of came out of nowhere. And then it became a disaster when the New York Times released that story of at least 66 women. 66, now, you and I have discussions off camera all the time, to the country and to the listeners. John and I battle back and forth over what we want. I have no shame in saying that, because that's how you build greatness, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You have to be honest and battle. And one of the things that we battle on is perception. And at least, so he's had happy endings with at least 66 women, but only 24 have complained. Oh, and see, that came out wrong. You know, what I'm saying, out of the 66, 24 complained. But when you see at least 66 women, in your mind, you're thinking, oh, my God, those are 66 women he was a predator towards. Right. So I think once that happened, the domino, those great little domino things you see, just went down everywhere and ended laying flat on his bank account with the reality, I got to pay up. Because the more it went, and with the precedent set in baseball to an innocent man who had consensual rough sex with a gold digger, you know, and then got suspended. I forget his name, but the pitcher for the L.A. Dodgers. I think he may be a Cy Young winner, if I remember correctly.
Wasn't it Bueller?
I can't remember, but 2 year suspension, and it was consensual, and even the courts recognized, this is a bad lady here, you know? So I think with all that precedent, it was just, we were looking at a minimum of 1 year and possibly worse. That's what the NFL was looking at. But with the Kraft situation, how much effect do you think Kraft will have his happy ending? And it's funny. This is terrible to say, but the next sailor, I'm not picturing Kraft there, and I'm not going to say how I'm picturing it, but let's just say it's not impressive watching an old 67-year-old man with a happy ending.
I don't think it'll make any difference legally. I don't think it'll make any difference in terms of what the NFL does.
I think it
might make a difference in perception if Watson is treated too harshly.
What's too harshly in your eyes? 2 years? Is 1 year too harsh in your eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think 1 year is perfect because of the 66 women. I think had it been the 22 to 24 and he settled out of court, six games. They wanted to go easy on him.
Yeah, yeah. I think 10 sounds about right to me, 10 or 12. Because at the end of the day, there's been no crime committed.
It doesn't matter.
I understand that. But I'm saying despite what people may think, unless something happens in the near future, no crime has been committed. And don't think that the Browns aren't pressuring the NFL like, we paid this guy a lot of money. I mean, that you're talking about reality and perception, right?
Hold on. Are they going to have – they may say that, but the NFL is like, you're the idiot who guaranteed the contract. That's your problem, not mine. That's what I would expect the NFL to say back.
That's what they're saying publicly, but let's not forget Goodell is an employee of 32 owners.
Who don't like the Cleveland Browns owner right now.
Okay.
I don't know how many – but would you think it's safe to assume that the Browns probably have minimal allies in this battle?
I would agree with that statement, yeah. Because they economically, like you said, now every quarterback who hasn't won a Super Bowl yet is going to want $230 million. And then the question is, if you're paying non-winners $230 million guaranteed, what do you pay the winners?
See, and that's what people don't understand once precedent is set. The next scrub that has half mediocre stat is going to demand it. And people go, well, what's the matter with that? Well, if I got a family, I want to go to the game. I'm sick and tired of having to pay $400 to go enjoy one Sunday and then deal with 3 hours of parking to get out of there. Right. And it is costing, because do you think they're going to pass the buck to themselves? No, it's passed to us. And here's what people don't realize. The players actually earn more out of all the collective money from ticket sales and things like that, not TV. That's their big issue. But they earn more than the owners do. So the owners have given, because at the end of the day, the owners foot the bill. And it's not that I'm bringing this up because we always talk politics, identity politics, all this. This has nothing to do with that. This has to do with who's taking the risk, you know, and it's always the owners. Now, granted, over the last 50 years, that's kind of become a bit of a laughing joke, considering we foot the bill for their stadiums now and things like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're the ones that have to pay all the bills. It's why the USFL is such a big risk, you know, for Fox right now.
Right.
So you're saying 10 games is what you would do. What do you think they're going to do, though?
Putting
you on the spot.
I think they'll probably suspend them for the year.
Do you think they can get away with suspending them for the year? Because that's been – remember, sometimes the media can drive the narrative. That's what the media has been talking about, a year. Do you think NFL looks at it? It's out there already. Let's just do a year.
Yeah. Look, it was obvious last year that the NFL is trying to avoid getting involved. Like last year, people don't realize it was the Texans that sat Watson, not the NFL.
That's my next question. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. I wasn't looking at my notes, but what do you make of the Houston Texans helping him with a posh hotel room and the NDA? Perception versus reality.
I don't think anything's going to come of that.
Oh, I think so. These are the PR nightmares that teams and companies hate to deal with.
Personally, I mean, I don't think anything's going to come of it. Because, like I think we said this a couple of podcasts ago, teams are in the business of protecting their best players. And if this guy says, hey, man, I need a hotel room to be able to do my thing in, like, all the Texans have to do is claim, like, hey, he just wanted a secure place. Like, all we did was provide a safe place for him. We don't know what happened behind closed doors. We didn't hear about no rapes. We didn't hear about no assaults. He just told us he needed a place for the evening to entertain a lady or two.
Oh, no, I believe you, because I truly believe that's probably what happened. Yeah. They probably had no clue.
Yeah.
This is why you have the rule. Never mix – it doesn't matter what industry. There's a rule at every job. Your personal life is your personal life. We don't want to get involved unless it affects our job. Then we're going to get involved in likely a negative fashion.
Right.
You know? So you're right. This was about taking care of their star player, and it's blown up. I think there's going to be pushback with that, maybe not in the public, but legally behind the scenes with Harden, you know, to try to minimize that. And I think Deshaun Watson, he may not be right at the end, but he's got those two legitimate issues. A little man crafts a happy ending, and the Houston Texans kind of being seen as enabling. I think that will affect it. And you could be right, John, 10 games, you know. I'm hoping for a year. I think a year makes everybody happy. I also think on the final caveat on this, and I'll give you the last word, but my last comment on this is I think they're going to work out a deal where Harden and Watson keep their mouths shut, meaning all camps are happy. Watson understands the position. His lingering for not solving these and putting him in, and the NFL is going to breathe a sigh of relief. We got this taken care of. Wasn't Brady suspended for the Deflategate?
Wasn't Brady. It was the Patriots who were punished. You know,
they lost
the pick. They got fined some dollars. Same thing with the videotaping of the other team's practices. You know, they lost the pick. They got fined type of thing. Yeah.
Well, any final words on Deshaun Watson?
No, man. I'm almost tired of talking about Deshaun Watson. I don't think he's a bad man. I don't think he's a bad kid. I just think he fell into a habit that a lot of star athletes at a young age fall into. You know, they've got way too much money, way too many women throwing themselves at him, even though in this case it may not have been necessarily that women were throwing themselves at him. But, you know, like, he'll learn. Like, you know, people forget. Well, how old is he, 23?
I think he's older than that.
23, 24, he's been whatever he is.
4 years. Yeah. You know?
But look, even if he's 25 or 26, right? In the overall scheme of things, he's still a kid. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, John, you're right. You're right. Here's what I would say, because this is what I think you're trying to say. Look, America, he's a young, heterosexual, horny male, which is what every single one of us was at that age. So that's what John's trying to say. He's because we can, when I was in the military, all I cared was about beer and women. That was it.
Yeah.
It's not that I had no shame in saying it. I'm just being 100% honest with what a man thinks with at that point in life. You're not.
Hey, you didn't even have to be in the military. I was on Wall Street at that age. What do you think I spent every day after the bell rang? What do you think me and my boys were out doing? We're out dogging women, like, all night, you know, and dropping half our salary trying to impress women with, like, $1,000 suits and expensive cars and the best cognac you could buy after work. You know, like, I mean, right now I wish I had all that money back. You know what I mean? Because I'd be a billionaire by now. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of that to take into account. So I just want him to get past it and get on with his life, quite honestly.
Well, hold on. Did it work?
Did what work?
Throwing all that money, those expensive suits.
I'm a married man. Now.
Okay, he is 26. Deshaun Watson. That's kind of what I said. I knew he was a little younger, but I knew he'd been around, so I figured he was post 25. And he's actually, he will be in his prime for the next 4 to 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, he'll be in his physical prime in the next 4 years. Then he'll be in his mental and physical prime once he hits 29, 30. And I say that because that's when that playbook becomes second nature to you. After, I remember Steve Young talking about it. You know, study the playbook, every year. Then 1 year you come in, you're like, I don't really need to study the playbook. I know it inside and out. You know, and that's the mark of a good system versus Sam Darnold. People don't realize Sam Darnold went through, 3 offensive coordinators?
So
let's move on to our next topic. And off camera, John and I got not heated, but we have disagreements, but we need to speak truths. We need to speak simple truths. And the truth of the matter, I'll start it off, John.
Sure.
Herschel Walker is a Republican candidate for United States Senator in the state of Georgia.
Right.
And I hate to say it, he's not a great candidate. He's not quick-witted enough when he's being questioned, so he avoids debates. You know, I'm not saying he's dumb, you know, but that's how he comes across with how he speaks, his actual answers, and it's snowballed. All of that, and people out there, conservatives, blacks, leftists, you may think, oh, he's getting close to the line. I'm just telling you what I see in human nature and how people react to that. And here's the reaction. He has a 7% support of black Georgians right now, you know. And my issue is that he was chosen. Well, one, he's uber popular. He is extremely, extremely popular in Georgia. So that was a huge reason why he won. But he also won because he got Trump's endorsement. And like it or not, Trump's base can still come in at 20-30% of a vote, of an individual's vote. Now, I may be exaggerating or maybe not exaggerating enough. But the point is, there's enough of that base to elevate any candidate. That's why people are pursuing Trump's vote. Or they don't badmouth Trump in the hope he doesn't give any endorsement.
Right.
There is power in those words.
Right.
But I just don't think he's a great candidate. He's not knowledgeable on the issues. He doesn't enunciate, and I'm not saying he doesn't speak well. What I'm saying is
you
understand him when he speaks, and sometimes he says things where you understand the generalities of it, but you're going, huh? And when you only got 7% of the black support in Georgia and you're an African-American, there's massive problems. His only saving grace is that his opponent is a pastor who is black and preaches abortion in the black community. So he's a self-destructive to his own culture type guy. And honestly, John, I've never ever heard, he's not the only one, but I've never really heard of a pastor condoning and promoting and pushing abortion. That seems so anti-religious in many ways to me, but I could be wrong. I left organized religion years ago. What are your thoughts? I kind of hogged the time there, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you. Look, I'll say some of the things you won't, but I'll say I'm not a Republican. I have no horse in that race. So Herschel Walker's a horrible candidate. If you're a Republican, you should be cringing at the thought that Herschel Walker is running for the Senate, for the U.S. Senate. To your point, it's not that he's black, it's or African-American, whatever the term is. He speaks with that traditional twang and drawl that's associated with people who are not intellectually on the ball, whether it's fair or not. Whether it's fair or not, like you said, sometimes it's perception, not reality, right? So when you talk to him, and I studied his interviews today to make sure I wasn't misrepresenting him, but he's exactly the way I remember him from when he played at the University of Georgia, when he played with the Cowboys, when he played with the Vikings, when he played with the USFL Generals. He's like, his grammar is atrocious.
Right. There's like, a perception in America.
Yeah.
In the South. I after coming to Panama, my dad was in the military. We moved to North Carolina, very south. And there's an ugly perception. Herschel Walker at times embodies that when he speaks. Because I've heard my conservative minority friends bring that up. So it's not something just white people are bringing up. It's something that let me give you an example. When LaDainian Tomlinson came out of college, we heard him on his first interview, and I couldn't understand him. And then you look at LT now. He's on the NFL Network. To me, he's the greatest role model. He overcame his weakness.
Yes.
He learned.
You could tell he went to a diction coach, and you could tell he learned how to – because he didn't have a drawl so much as you kind of talk with his mouth down. And it was very hard to pick him up, right? Herschel Walker is different in that he's loud. You can hear him. He's not soft-spoken. But what he says, just whether he's intelligent or not, I'm not even going to – he sounds like he's unintelligent, and that's the key. He sounds like he's unintelligent.
And that's perception versus reality.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
People perceive that.
Yeah.
He's toast. Now, the reason I brought LT up, though, to finish that point, it's not because I wanted him to be a better person and speak better so I could understand him. When I saw LT, I saw one of the nicest football players drafted, kind, respectful towards the game he played.
And smart.
Exactly. So I was looking at it from a marketing perspective. I'm a marketer. When I look at every single athlete who's drafted, the very first thought I look at is how marketable. My wife will give me the funniest look. I go, baby, that's a good looking man there. Yeah, I could do a lot with that guy, you know, because I'm looking at it from a marketing or how they speak and all that. It's about selling the product to the masses. I don't care. I have friends who speak like Herschel. We laugh. We crack. They crack on me about being the only white Latino they've ever seen. I crack on them.
Yeah, but the key is, William, you don't want the people who speak like that speaking for you. That's the difference, right? Like, so
right, because he confuses what he says because he doesn't articulate it well enough.
Yes, exactly.
Again, this has to do with communication and getting your message out. And the quandary I'm in is I love Herschel Walker. I grew up loving this guy.
I did too. I think he's like Bo Jackson. He's a natural athlete. But listen, here's a perfect example to compare the two, right? Physically, they're the same type of guy, right? Bo Jackson, Herschel Walker, just guys who never worked out. All they did was push-ups and sit-ups all day, and they were these monster athletes, fast, big, built like tanks, ran like gazelles. And Herschel Walker, people don't realize, in his mid-40s, he became an MMA cage fighter. And he's a karate guy. So athletically, physically, both him and Bo Jackson, amazing. But when you listen to Bo Jackson speak, even though he's got a little bit of a southern drawl, Bo Jackson never comes across as someone who's dim-witted. Again.
Yeah, I think that's the problem is it's not – I disagree with you, John. I don't think he comes across dim-witted. I think when you hear his actual answers, you're like, what's he talking about?
No, well, I agree with you. I'm trying to avoid saying that he is dim-witted. I'm saying when you listen – like I listened to an interview he did with a local TV newsman, and he was talking about Warnock, who's that preacher you mentioned who's his opponent in the Senate race in Georgia. And literally one of his statements was, do he know what the Ten Amendments be? The Ten Commandments be? And I said to myself,
right.
You know, like, listen, I understand, like, I excuse people who say y'all and, you know.
Well, I say y'all.
Because I'm a northerner. So to me, that's like, oh, that's a southern thing, right? Or to say pop instead of soda, right? But that's a northern southern thing. But when someone says something like, do he know what the Ten Commandments be?
Well, see, that doesn't bother me, John. What bothers me are when he talks without enunciating his point, and I'm actually confused as to, well, what's his answer? I think I know where he's going, but I don't. And that's right. Where, in my perspective, that's how I'm looking at the voting block. If they don't get that, you're not going to gain some votes that you need. He's going to get the Trump vote. You know, I hope he wins. I'd rather have him than Warnock, who promotes abortion in his own community and who wants to move towards communism.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't vote for either one of them. And that's where I draw the line, whereas you may not at times.
Hold on. There's a big difference. Herschel Walker may come across as dim-witted, may speak a certain way, but we don't yet know. So I'm holding out hope. Herschel Walker is not going to do anything to try to destroy the country like Warnock is. You have a child. I have nephews. I look at their future, you know, and I'd rather have a Herschel Walker who will at least try to think things through, come to the best decision, versus Warnock, who is only loyal to a party because it's making him rich and wants to bring in communism.
Yeah. Well, listen, I don't know about bringing in communism, but I just don't know Warnock enough, so I'll take your word for it. But Herschel Walker also is someone who's been caught in several lies already.
Right, that was my next point.
He claimed to work for the FBI and the local police. He never did. He claimed to have graduated from the University of Georgia. He never did, especially when we saw him leave school early as a junior or a sophomore to go play for Donald Trump in the USFL. People forget that connection.
Didn't they have a draft?
Yeah, but he played for Donald Trump.
You're implying him and Donald Trump were tight, and that's why he played.
No. I'm saying him and Donald Trump go back to USFL Generals the first go round in the early 80s, right?
No, I get that. But you brought up Trump, so let's get off people thinking we're racist when we're not. We're just trying to show a perspective that we see that others will see, and move on to Trump. Because to the Trump constituents, you're probably not going to like this segment, but I want you to listen. Because my issue with Trump is there are times he throws us under the bus for his ego and himself.
By us, you mean Republicans or conservatives? Define us.
Good point. Conservatives.
Yeah.
Because it was the conservatives that got him elected. At the end of the day, he got other votes and all that, but his foundational base was conservatives, including fundamentals. They kept trying to tie every conservative to being a fundamentalist, and that's just absolutely not true. But that base, he would throw us under the bus. I was just telling my wife, if we wanted that wall, we could have got it. But he wanted to play politics with Mitch McConnell, get his friendship. He would also come around every time, and I can't think of a specific one, but there were about four or five times this happened, and I can dig it up for next podcast if somebody wants to challenge it, where he'd go, I will sign it this time, but not next time. Well, next year would roll around, and he would say the same thing and not stand his ground. And that really irked me. Kavanaugh. That was a compromise, and it almost blew up on his face. So there's been times he's thrown us under the bus, but the most heinous times he's thrown us under the bus is by abandoning the conservative candidate because that candidate has done something to ruffle his feathers and endorsing the rhino just because he's angry at the other candidate. And I can't blame him for what happened with Jeff Sessions, you know. But Jeff Sessions was working magic with the immigration and the border. And my issue is that Trump didn't even care, you know. So he endorsed the Mitch McConnell rhino, you know. So he got mad at Mo Brooks this past cycle. I wouldn't say Mo Brooks is a true blue conservative, but he's closer to the conservative that I want than his opponent, who Trump actually called a rhino, and then down the road he pulled the endorsement from Brooks and then endorsed her. I'm not stupid. That's what angers me about Trump. And that's why we lost a lot of battles. Trump got too cute. And at the end of the day, by getting too cute, wanting to work with McConnell, that was one side of the battle that destroyed us, meaning this is why we're still in this mess. And the other side is he views loyalty to Trump more than the bigger picture. Well, I'm trying to do all these great things. You know, instead, it's like, well, you got to be loyal to me first. And he will flip on you the moment he perceives you don't have that loyalty. But here's the problem. Trump does not always return that loyalty back. And my friends, the reason I bring this up to you is you can keep him in check. And we have done that. We've disagreed with him with certain endorsements. There has been pushback, like the Oz, Dr. Oz endorsement. He lost that battle. There was nothing but pushback by conservatives. So it is happening. And my whole issue with Trump is that you betray us at times when you don't have to for your ego. And I will never get over that. I will vote for you. I will applaud what you do. But I will also not hide when I see issues that you're not serving those who you say you're going to serve. And, John, that's my take. What's yours? Because I know you really love Trump. Brokeback John and Trump.
Well, listen, I agree with your diagnosis. Trump is a narcissist. He prefers loyalty to principle every single time. This goes back to his business days in New York. He just couldn't care less how things got done as long as you were loyal to him. And there's four or five people that, amazingly enough, he has not thrown under the bus in his business career. One of them is his accountant, who's actually, I think, doing time for him right now.
He did throw that guy. That guy threw him under the bus.
No, he hasn't yet. The guy's son did. But the guy himself did not. His accountant did not. The accountant's son did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the lawyer. The lawyer.
Yeah, that's a different guy. But, so there's these people that Trump – and Trump, for him, because – listen, like most petty dictators, the most important thing to Trump is loyalty. Not principle, not the conservatives, not the Republicans, not even the country. What's most important to Trump is Trump. And you may disagree with me, but going back, that's what's most important to Trump. If it happens to align with what you think is good for conservatism, great.
But, oh, no, John, I agree. I agree. That is the problem with Trump. Now, the one thing I'll give you pushback on is I expect loyalty in a job. You are a family, you are a job. Now, Trump's a little different because I've only worked in small business type setups and all that. When you're working with a bigger corporation, we're working billions in assets, not necessarily cash flow as we know with Trump, but with assets, that's a little different story. But at the end of the day, I'll give some pushback at work. I do demand loyalty, but politics is not a job, and he seems to have carried what you said over into politics in a very negative fashion. Because I truly believe in my heart, we could have had that law bill. If Trump had – Trump won, and supposedly it wasn't close, but he kind of had a mandate in my eyes with Congress and with the people. And if he wanted that law, we could have had it. He could have pushed it. He could have vetoed. He could have done and destroyed some of these Republicans for their primary – what I'm saying – he could have represented the people and done what was right. And in politics, it's like a war. So what I just said, it's not that I condone, but that's how politics work. But that said, he didn't. You know, so what's happened? The border issue has exploded. And like every politician, they love it when a problem doesn't end because they can keep campaigning on it. You know, good and well, if Trump runs in 2024, which I expect him to, immigration is going to be one of his top things. And my first question is, what are you going to do to build a wall when your own Republican Party starts to push back? Now, obviously, nobody's going to hear me ask that question, but that's a question every one of us should have.
Yeah, look, Trump's obviously going to run in 2024 unless somehow they manage to pin something on him, Garland, if he decides to do it. But he'll run in 2024. And it'll be the same old thing. It'll be like he'll have his Trump loyalists. They're going to vote for him. I don't really think the issues matter as much to them. I think it's more Trump. Like, personally, I think the Republicans are better served if they run DeSantis because he's more of a traditional conservative. I don't think he's necessarily someone who's got the character flaws that Trump has. So you could be as conservative as you want with DeSantis, but you don't have the character flaws that a Trump has or Ted Cruz has.
You're right, John. And let me tell you a little secret. We just finished talking about Herschel Walker and the negatives and perception of how people perceive him. I always said during the debates, I go, Trump is surviving the debates because he's loud and boisterous and obnoxious, but he never gives details on the issues. It's always that general answer. I go, once you get him in a one-on-one debate, he's going to get destroyed. And that's what happened. He just looked like a dim-witted fool when Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio had him on a debate. I mean, they mocked him. I mean, it was just a pure mockery. And being a Cruz supporter at the time, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I was not shocked when Trump had no honor and chose not to do the final debate with Cruz because he knew Cruz would destroy him. And I don't know why I brought up that point. I just thought it was necessary to show at the end of the day, Trump is not – that's what it was. You brought up DeSantis. Everything Trump is not, DeSantis is. DeSantis is quick-witted with the right answer. He's not afraid to get in your face, but when he talks back and talks to those reporters, it's not demagoguery. He hits him with hard facts of things they have or haven't done.
Right.
DeSantis would make the better candidate, and we are reaching a point where it's still Trump to lose, but where I think it would have been, say, 70-30, 60-40, Trump over DeSantis. I think we're looking at a 55-45. DeSantis is getting more and more support every day, but at the end of the day, this is still Trump's to lose.
Well,
and
it also depends on what the more – like, it depends what the Mitch McConnells of the world – look – I was going to say, it's no secret. If you ask them, like, when they're drinking somewhere, if they're throwing back the single malt scotch somewhere in a nice bar somewhere in Washington, D.C., McConnell will tell you he can't stand Donald Trump. He can't stand him. But he understands that he's his ticket to getting the 35% of the Trump loyalists who want to vote for Trump, right? So he's not going to do anything politically to piss them off. But the truth of the matter is, Mitch McConnell would fall to his knees and thank Jesus if Trump, for whatever reason, was not the candidate in 2024.
Oh, I agree.
Right? So,
and he's actually one guy who would probably not tell a soul, but would be smiling with glee if Trump was invited.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. In fact, just for the record, because our base here, sports companies tend to be libertarians and conservatives, is I don't think Mitch McConnell's a good human being. I view him more vile than Donald Trump because he's been in that Congress for 30-plus years bending us over, no KY jelly, and telling us, are you having fun yet? Are you having fun yet? As we groan and whimper in pain. That's what Mitch McConnell has done to our country. And people get shocked when I say that. Again, here, they get mad when I say things like that. Well, first of all, my family, my wife, everybody gets mad because of how I say it. But I believe that. And I think that's the problem in politics. At the end of the day, the Mitch McConnells, the Charles Schumer, they're not here to help us. And that's why Trump got my vote. Oh, and to your point, in terms of why they voted for Trump, again, I've said it the whole time. Trump was their fighter, their champion. Obama was their fighter, their champion. You know, that's how people look at people who they want to represent them. They don't look at them as intellectually gifted. That's who we want. If so, Ted Cruz will get elected. You know, we look for fighters. I know in the Latino culture, that's predominant. That's why we get strongmen in power who a week later bend us over. But they have guns pointed at us, so we don't have a choice. But the political world, that is Trump's savior. He is still seen as an outsider. Agree or disagree?
I think that shine is worn off a little bit. I think the ones who view him as an outsider at this point are really just the hardcore Trumpers, the QAnon guys. I think the shine of that has fallen off a lot. Like, even if you think
actually, John, you're wrong. I'm interrupting you because 30% of his base is not QAnon.
No, I didn't put a percentage on it, but I'm saying those types of people.
No, but when you said it, you gave the perception, and that's my pushback. You know I'm going to support Trump. The pushback is the perception that they're QAnon voters. That's not true.
No, I didn't say that.
I don't even know what a QAnon person is.
I said the Trump loyalists, the QAnon guys, these are all people who will take a bullet for Trump. That's it. They just love Trump, and that's them. Like, when you put all of them in a big bucket, it works out to 30-35% of the electorate, roughly.
But it's fair to say every candidate has that base.
No.
In terms of that has been successful, Obama had that base. Trump had that base.
Right, but like the other base, it's weird. It's like Trump is very cult-like. Obama had that to some extent.
No, because you're referring to the mainstream media, where 95% documented, 90% was documented, or was it 95%, of being negative Trump. So that's free. They are, see, again, look at the numbers, the voting bases, the demographics. Obama had like 95%, 98% of the black vote. That in and of itself is 13% of his base. Then you add your regular white leftists, and you're starting to get up to those Trump numbers. Trump was able to take the dissatisfied blue-collar Democratic vote, the fundamentalist vote, which every candidate on the Republican side has struggled because they tend to be – they don't want to get into that battle. Trump – and that shocked me. I was like, damn, this is going full-fledged, because that was part of the strategy. So when you look at the numbers, that's what it breaks down. And I'm not trying to push back because I dislike what you're saying. I just want to be accurate here of perception versus reality, because all I ever hear is QAnon. Honestly, John, I don't know what a Q – what is QAnon? I don't know what it is. I'm not being sarcastic. I don't know because I've never
– I'd love to tell you, but I don't. We don't have enough time for me to tell you.
Is it that deep?
It's actually quite simple, but – to do it justice, yeah, it would take me half an hour.
Are the Proud Boys QAnon?
No.
Okay, because I've heard the term QAnon.
I'll explain. If you want to make it a topic next show, because we're already getting close to an hour, I don't want to spend another half hour on it. But what I meant to say is there's the very hardcore Trumpers right now are the only ones who still view him with that sort of awe. The other Trumpers view him, which I think might be the majority of Trump supporters, view him as, oh, he's the best guy out there, but he's not infallible. Like, because I know a lot of them felt betrayed when he started admitting that COVID wasn't a hoax, when he admitted to taking the vaccine, when he – I forget what it was, one of his rallies after he lost, he showed up wearing a mask or whatever it was.
But it's not that, John. And I hate to interrupt you, we're just running out of time, but you bring up a great point with the COVID. The fact that he was pushing and promoting the vaccine, not because it was the right thing to do, but because he wanted credit for having been the person to do it. And sure, it aligned with most of the pro-vaccine people who wanted to push. But what I saw was, that guy's just butthurt. He's PO'd because the media refuses to give him credit. And even the White House, they had Biden's aides had to come back out and correct Biden, who said Trump didn't come up with a vaccine or didn't produce it or all. But it's a great final point to put on ego versus reality. He didn't care about the COVID, what it did and all that. I mean, maybe he did. But my point is he cared more about getting credit for Operation Warp Speed, which was
Listen, I gave him credit for that, and I gave him credit for the right to try law. But listen, one of the funniest things I saw out of these January 6th hearings, and I know I'm biased, but it rang so true to me, was when William Barr was testifying, and he said, I got summoned into the office of the president, and he asked me to confirm that the election was stolen from him. And when I told him, Mr. President, there was nothing wrong with this election. We couldn't find any evidence of wrongdoing, whether you believe it or not.
I don't believe it because you can't sit there and do an investigation.
It's not the issue I'm bringing up.
I know.
But
they
asked him what was the president's reaction. And Barr said he looked at me and started screaming, you hate Trump, you hate Trump, you hate Trump. Now, to me, I'm biased. That rings everything I've known about Trump my whole life of living in New York with him in New York. He speaks of himself in the third person. He takes everything personally. It's not just that Barr came to a different conclusion or they disagree. It must be that if he didn't agree with him, it's because he hates Trump.
Right. And that's his ego.
And that's his ego. And to me, that was probably the funniest thing so far that I've seen come out of those January 6th hearings. That and Peter Navarro accusing
Look, we haven't seen the other side. Real quick on William Barr, it turns out he made a comment at that hearing about the 2,000 mules, and it turns out the comment he made wasn't even in the movie. So he never saw the movie. He was just speaking out his ass, probably based off what somebody told him. So,
well, that's another one that goes in deep because I heard what he said and whatever.
Have you seen 2,000 mules?
I have not seen the movie.
Yeah, rest my case.
No, I said I haven't. I admit I haven't seen the movie. But,
I love giving John a hard time. Why? Because he's easy going. But we do have serious discussions and disagreements. But the key is to respect one another. And we hope you all can do that with each other because that's why we're in this mess. All right, Big John, moving along. We got big news again from a big man. tight end Rob Gronkowski. So what's happening with what I view as one of the tight ends who's had some of the most devastating injuries happen to any tight end in his career?
Well, Gronk announced his retirement again, that he's hanging up the cleats. Now, from several unscientific studies that I've done over the last day, just flipping channels, you know, most
channel surfing study
101. Yeah. Like most of the sports announcers always, all of them seem to say, well, if he's really serious this time, where does he rank among all the tight ends in history? You know? Listen, is he really retiring? I don't know. Maybe it's the type of retirement that around playoff time they decide to talk him back in. If Brady still can talk him into stuff, maybe that's it. Maybe he is really beat up. Because, look, the truth of the matter is he took a lot of punishment. Because as great as he was, he's also a big target. People forget. They think it's an advantage to be big. And it is. But that means you're also a bigger target. You take more shots. You can't avoid shots. So someone like Gronkowski's been beat up his entire career, beat up hard, you know, and he plays with a certain style. He's not like one of these
he's a
hybrid tight ends.
He get rough and tumble. When he
exactly. He can block. He plays off the line. He plays on the line. So let's assume that he is serious about retiring. The question becomes, where does he sit among the all-time tight ends? And actually, William, I think he has to be considered one of the better – like he's definitely a top 10 tight end in all time. He might be in the top 7, maybe top 5 because, listen, he's number 1 in career receptions for a tight end. He's number 3 in 100-yard – I'm sorry, let me take that. He's number 1 in number of 100-yard games. He's number 3 in terms of career touchdowns by a tight end. He's number 5 in terms of receptions for a tight end, number 5 receiving yards for a tight end, and number 10 receptions. So listen, all the major categories, the worst he ranks is 10, and for a lot of them he's top 5, you know, top 3, top 5. And he's been injured, as you said, so he's missed a lot of time in his career as well. Is he as good as Tony Gonzalez was? Probably not. Is he as good as look? One of my favorite tight ends of all time was Kellen Winslow.
But John, to bottom line question: is he Hall of Fame bound?
Yes, without a doubt, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer.
The arguments are just opinions.
Yes,
who you like the most? So
right.
For example, when people talk about certain quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, this, that, I'm like Terry Bradshaw, 4 rings. Period. They may have been better quarterbacks. 4 rings, never lost a Super Bowl, which he has over Tom Brady.
Yeah,
right. Same thing with Joe Montana. Was it 3 or 4? And my point is, people can laugh at me, whatever. I'm like, but it's my opinion, so I can scream it as loud as I want, you know. Because at the end of the day, they are in the Hall of Fame, and it's a disservice to the players of yesteryear. Because well, those players could never have played in today's game, and I'm like, you're right. Today's player could never have played in that game with
right.
no helmet.
Right.
You know, just a leather piece of head, leather
right.
piece of head. So don't talk to me about we have the better athletes, but they would not have survived 3 games back then.
Listen, yeah. People look at Joe Namath's career stats and they wonder, how's he in the Hall of Fame? Like,
exactly.
And then you stop and wonder, like, okay, but did you know that every time Don Maynard came off the line, they could tackle him? Like, it wasn't pass interference if you bumped them out of bounds or you tackled them or clotheslined them before the ball got thrown. So, Mel Blunt was so good at that they had to change the rules.
That's right. The Steelers are my team. Well, here's the other thing. Joe Namath is a great example, too, of stats. So, for example, Terrell Davis and Joe Namath, it wasn't their stats that got them in. Denver got their Super Bowl because of Terrell Davis.
Right.
All John Elway was an uglier, whiter-looking Dan Marino. That's all he was. And without Dan's numbers. Dan's numbers were much better. Then they got Terrell Davis. Then they won 2 Super Bowls. I just saw that tweet on that. It aggravated me. Y'all act like Elway carried him. No, he did not. That helicopter ride, that flip that he did in
the Super Bowl,
minimized his career. I mean, they were blown out of Super Bowls. Then you have Joe Namath. Joe Namath, to me, is in the Hall of Fame for one reason. He saved the AFL and forced didn't force it, but
it was a merger.
And he was the first and only one who you could sit there and say he guaranteed a victory. Everybody else is just copying him. Says all the means of times. But the very first one, I guarantee victory, and it came through. And to do that in the media market, that is New York City, which at the times, now it's diluted a bit, but it was a time when the New York Times, every American had access to a copy or was reading it because they led the nation in news and stories.
And also there were 14 or 17-point underdogs in that Super Bowl. So it wasn't like he predicted a victory when they were favored. He predicted a victory for an upstart league against the powerhouse. People forget how good the Baltimore Colts were back then with Earl Morrill and Johnny and Johnny Unitas and Tom Matte and Rich Caster and Raymond Berry and all these fun guys they had. Bubba Smith, I think, was on that team.
Raymond Berry's an old
Yeah. So you had guys there that were, so you're right. Joe Namath, by numbers alone, would not be in the Hall of Fame if he was a today player. But Joe Namath playing under today's rules, he'd be like
he would have knee problems. His knees would be protected.
His receiver he wouldn't have to worry about his receivers getting mugged.
And that brings up a good point. I didn't mention it, but as you were talking about Rob Gronkowski earlier, and you're saying when I asked where does he rank, I meant to say where does he rank with modern day tight ends because of what you said. The game has changed. What people forget too, and something I've had a doctor explain to me to validate my belief, he goes, these guys get huge, but their joints are the same size once they're an adult. They don't grow. He goes, that's why these knee injuries, these broken elbows, that's why they can be so devastating because they're carrying around a lot of extra weight, that they're not accustomed. So as big as Gronkowski was, and I'll never forget, it was one of his later injuries, and he's going down the seam, wide open, catches the ball like this, and then his knees literally get cut out from under, and he went down to pain. And the first thing I thought, those knees aren't as big as that leg muscle, is it? And I wasn't mocking him. Yeah. That's going to be a devastating injury, and he's had too many of those. But today's player, while they're faster, bigger, stronger, and all the rules that protect them, you know what? There will be a fight, John, in the first 2 minutes of an NFL game back in the 40s because of how they played, the punching, the kicking, and the rest of it. They didn't say anything. I mean, they wouldn't last. They would be thrown out of the game for getting up and arguing with the ref right away. So our players today, better athletes. Better players, but it was a different game back then.
I agree with you, but I think Gronkowski might be one of those guys that would have done well in any era, meaning that he was tough. He made tough catches. He benefited from today's rules for receivers, but he also was – you could tell he was a tough guy. He could take a hit. He had great hands.
I don't know. It was a different game back. You're right. I mean, he could have played there, but as injury prone as he was, he wouldn't have had
to. Like, I'm comparing him to, like, say, Dave Casper. I'm comparing him to.
I'm sorry.
Those guys.
Like, better than Dave Casper.
Listen, he's probably. You know who he's probably like to some extent? Mike Ditka. When Ditka played tight end, he was known not necessarily for being fast or anything, but he was a tough, hard nosed tight end. Make the tough catch, and he held on to the ball, and Ditka was always hurt too. So it's the same thing. I think Gronkowski and Ditka might be those guys, and Ditka's in the Hall of Fame as a tight end. So maybe that's the comparison. But yeah, definitely, I think Gronkowski, if he's retired, good luck to him. I think he's got a great career ahead of him as just a celebrity, just somebody who's always on Instagram and always showing up in shows and videos and things like that. But I definitely think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. No doubt in my mind, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I can't remember whether it was Ditka or Butkus who got on Twitter like 6 months ago.
And Butkus.
If y'all haven't followed it, I don't know if he's still doing it, but his first few tweets were just hilarious. Like the naive kid who got the keys of the car for the first time.
Or just like an old man, get off my lawn, just screaming at everybody on Twitter. It was entertaining, yeah.
So, John, another great episode. A couple of final questions. One more final question is, does he come back or not? Does he stay retired or not? What's your gut tell you?
I think if the Bucks are making a Super Bowl run, you might hear Brady trying to talk him out of retirement. Other than that, I don't think he's coming back.
I'm in agreement. I think if they make the Super Bowl run, he'll come back. Look, you can tell the guy's addicted to the limelight. And that, I'm not saying it in a bad or good way, but, I mean, when you're young, a superstar, it's hard to leave that. Domestic issues, going broke, tend to follow people once they leave the sport. So let's hope he comes back. Okay, real quick, Big John, talk to us about your latest interview, because it is sports related, with the Big Questions with Big John.
Oh yeah, so this week the episode Big Question with Big John, interview a great friend of both of ours actually, and he's an original gangster when it comes to
that's OG
gangster. Which, by the way, he's old enough not to know what OG stood for, which he asked me during the show. What is OG? You keep calling me OG. What does OG mean? We're talking about Greg Kellogg. And if you don't know who Greg is, he's one of the founders of our industry, really. He was a producer. He was the first digital producer at Fox Sports. He founded the FanEx Leagues, the Fantasy Experts Leagues. He's worked for just about every magazine. He's written for just about every magazine. If you've known.
Well, did he write for you?
He wrote for Sports Grumblings. He was our first senior NFL writer after me, after myself. Great guy, a super guy. Much like yourself, he has a military background. He traveled the world, not just the country, traveled the world. So I'm not going to give his whole history. You could tune into the show for that. But, yeah, Greg Kellogg, famous for Kellogg's Comments. That's another one, both with K's. That was his little hook back in the day. So, yeah, check out this episode of The Big Question with Big John featuring our good friend, Mr. Greg Kellogg.
And there's more. I mean, John talks to I forget her name. She's a Playboy model. What's her name? I can't remember her name.
Debbie Driggs.
Casting director of some major shows, Married with Children. One of my favorites, The Jeffersons. I never missed that as a kid. Alice, The Jeffersons. And I can't remember there was another show.
Yeah, if it was a sitcom in the 70s, Mark Hirschfeld probably did the casting for it. Eric Nagel, who was the producer of the Opie and Anthony show. I got to know him when I was doing my Sirius XM show. We became friends because we used to broadcast from adjacent studios. We've stayed in touch over the years, so I asked him for an interview. He was more than gracious enough to provide that for me.
And our favorite Hall of Famer as well, Scotty Engel.
And so Scotty the King Engel, yeah.
A lot of things there. Yeah. And guys, I'm excited. One would think, hey, when do I get to interview people? I'm not like that. John is great at this. We're trying to line up some good people as a small company. A little bit more difficult, but we are persistent. So we will bring you more Big Questions with Big John.
Right. And if you want bigger names for me to interview, you know how we get that done? You watch the show.
Exactly.
We build an audience.
What's your URL, John?
Sportsgrumblings.com, and just click on the podcast links. You'll see it, The Big Questions with Big John. You could also find us on Apple Podcasts or, iTunes. Search for it there. We have the Sports Grumblings channel where you find this show as well. You can find The Big Questions with Big John. So check us out. I love doing it, and hopefully you guys will enjoy watching it.
We love doing it too, Big John. And with that, America, it's been a wonderful evening, a little different podcast, but we got to talk the tough subjects, and that's what the libertarian pushes this conservative into doing. So good night, America.
Bones and notches to y'all.